The At Your Instep podcast is brought to you in part by Empire Cards. Check them out at www.empirecards.com.
Hello, and welcome to At Your Instep, episode 43. I am here today with Dave.
What's up?
Jordan.
Hey, guys.
And Mike.
Hey, what's going on?
And we're here to provide you with another fun-filled episode. We're sorry about what we missed last week. Kind of just fell apart at the end, but it's all right. We're back here, and we're going to talk about a few things that happened. So we want to talk about the Pro Tour, and then we'll go ahead and we'll move on to the fall set, and because that got announced while we were away. And then we also want to talk about Conspiracy. And then we, of course, want to talk about our competitive stuff that happened. So SCGU New Jersey. I'm sorry, my slurred speech.
This is what happens. Space Jam Atlanta, off,
as well as Space Jam Atlanta, and PTQ Comic Town that happened over the weekend as well. And we won't have any questions of the week or anything like that, just because like we'll have a pretty long episode as it is. So first, let's go ahead and we'll talk about the PT, the Pro Tour that happened in Atlanta, taken down by none other than Patrick Chapin, one of the very few people that have gotten to the Hall of Fame and then won a Pro Tour. So
is he the only one?
He's not the only one. I don't think so, but he's one of the few.
So who else is in the
pretty sure Kibler was a Hall of Famer when he won.
Yeah.
Oh, and
okay.
The last
yeah,
one.
I think so. So
I think he won his first one ever, though.
I think it's just after being inducted.
Okay.
That's what I meant to say.
That's what I just want. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, and this is
good achievement.
This is his first Pro Tour win, which is pretty exciting. He's obviously well known in the community, and so congratulations to him. And we didn't necessarily want to talk a whole lot about the block format of the Pro Tour because it's. I think this one is especially interesting because there's no real good wrath. So you see a lot of interesting decks. But there are some things that did happen that were kind of already established. So things like Corsair of Kruphix and Elspeth, those are good cards, guys. Turns out.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say there's no wrath. There's there's Anger of the Gods. But the problem is, I mean, as you saw from this Pro Tour, Corsair of Kruphix was like the number one card. And Anger of the Gods doesn't kill that.
And the other one that saw a lot of players drown in sorrow. But same thing. I mean, the best turn two and three plays in the format was to go, turn two Caryatid into turn three Coursers, then hoping to hit a land off top of your library or a land drop.
That was like the insane opening.
Yeah. And Anger will kill the Caryatid, but again, still have the Courser. And Drown in Sorrow was like, I'm not getting either of those. So, a little weird.
Board states would go from like simple to very complex in a matter of like three turns.
So, like 50 permanents on each
side.
Like, Like if you watch the coverage at all, it was just like both players' top of their library was always revealed. So like you just had perfect information every time because just million Coursers in play.
You already thought your opponent too, so you knew they were
exactly.
Of the library.
So what were the popular colors of the list that we saw? So mainly
green
was,
and then play
was
other
the focus.
Colors.
Yeah, I mean,
there were two different bug control decks played by Channel Fireball. Proper, I guess.
Yes.
And then,
yeah.
and then you had the Pantheon list as well.
Minus Chapin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the other popular green decks was the red-green Elspeth deck.
Yeah.
I still love that's an archetype. It's like, if you make a deck theme, right, like if you have Devotion is the archetype, so you have, Black Devotion, so B Devotion or BG Devotion. So in this case, Elspeth is the archetype, but we're also going to go and splash red green. That just makes me giggle. Like it's like, okay, cool. What archetype are you playing, Elspeth?
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
That wasn't
and that's the
a
card
bad,
that dominated block before this too. Was,
yeah, exactly.
Like, this wasn't a secret that Elspeth was the card you played, and you just kind of whatever else you liked.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, even we talked about that. I mean, Elspeth just pretty much was so format warping.
Well, look how good it made the Sphinx. The 3-5?
Prognostic Sphinx.
Yeah. That was another big card. That was kind of a card that didn't see a whole lot of play prior, and this kind of had like a big coming-out party for this because it's so good against Elspeth. Also very hard to kill, obviously, because you can get the Hexproof. But
it's like, all right, Flyers to the tokens that matter, check. 3 power, so Elspeth can't minus it, check. Golden.
Scry 3 every time you die. It's sick.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting about this format is, you mentioned the lack of wraths, but there's also very few ways to get card advantage, which is why I think you saw Corsair kind of take over you know, so much. Right. It's one of the few ways.
The believers, you know, as another right. way to get a little bit of advantage.
Right. These are cards that give you incremental advantage, but it's not like the last block Pro Tour. We started like Pro Tour Dragon's Maze, it was all like Sphinx Revelation.
Decks, right.
So it was just like you just went over the top and drew seven cards.
McLaren and his butthurt, I didn't win the Pro Tour post. Afterward, it was a good article, but like you could tell he was a little salty and stuff. But he's like, yeah, after you shuffled and presented your deck to your opponent, they shuffled and handed it back to you. Hope the top 30 cards are really good. And that's kind of the way he felt about the it was a direct quote from the article. He's like, you better hope your top 30 cards are insane. And I mean, that's a good stance to what you said. There's no drawing cards, manipulating the library.
Well, there's a lot of manipulation. I mean, there's a ton of scry.
Yeah,
I mean, but
read the bones to see. You know, with a courser at the end, you could essentially see five cards just off of read the bones, where you could scry two, draw two, and reveal the card off your library. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways to manipulate. And you know, the games where both people had like a Sphinx going back and forth for a while were just. I will say this: I really think this is a player's Pro Tour. Whereas you didn't have something so dominating, you had those incremental advantages, and you saw pros take advantage of it, and you saw people like Reed Duke, who has shown his play skill is ridiculous. But then watching like those scry decisions are important, like set up how the rest of the tempo of the game goes depending on where you put something, and you could just lose a game from scrying incorrectly, and you have to scry 15 times a game. You know what I mean? Those decks are playing 12 scry lands. You know what I mean? Like you. It was interesting to see, at least. Not the most exciting gameplay. I would attest it to something like a pitcher like throwing a no hitter. Like I would enjoy watching a pitcher throw a no hitter, but the average baseball fan's like, can somebody hit something like a home run?
Right.
Just like once, do something cool.
Right. Yeah, I enjoyed it. There was a little bit more diversity than I was actually expecting.
Yeah, I think that was kind of surprising. Now, something that I also found surprising was sort of the lack of Nykthos decks, the lack of devotion decks, which is kind of funny to see.
Well, all the things of devotion they were saying, all the things that had two or three mana symbols in their cost are in the last block, not in this block. So,
right.
Unless you're playing like Mind Reaver or whatever it is, as your blue two drop, you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting contrast because you saw with Pro Tour Theros, when you saw kind of Theros debut in competitive play, and you saw these devotion decks come out of the woodwork, and that was like the big mechanic to come out of the set.
Right.
And now at the end of the block, it's like nowhere to be found. So it'd be interesting to see how this carries over to the next block.
You would hope that it would carry over into the next block, which was kind of a good segue to kind of go into it, is that the next block was actually announced at the Pro Tour and is Khans of, Tarkir. So it's a new setting. It's something...
Khans!
It had to be done.
I disagree entirely.
Thank you for that, Mike.
So it's a new setting. And it is something that we haven't seen before. It is designed by Eric Lauer and... It was developed by Eric Lauer and designed by Mark Rosewater Samara. So the same team that we've seen for Innistrad and Theros.
Funny story about Mark Rosewater. My wife was watching some coverage with me when that announcement was made. She never heard Mark Rosewater talk. Now, I love Mark Rosewater. The guy is awesome and the most excitable nerd you'll ever meet. But he's like, okay, yeah, we're going to do this. And Katie just looks at me like, does like the slow look over. And she's like, who is this guy? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. She's like, that's... Oh, I'm like, I know. She's like, you listen to him normally? I'm like, when he talks, kind of listen.
He's kind of in charge of our game a little bit.
A little bit. He has the vision.
But not the voice.
Maybe. Well, guys.
You know the voice we do to make fun of people? That's his voice, like, for real?
Kind of. We still love you, Mario. So, something that they did say during this and has already been known, that the block structure for the set is going to be different. We don't know how yet, though, unfortunately. Now, he did say it was going to be a large set, small set, large set again, so similar to Innistrad block and Zendikar block. And it's actually the home plane of Sarkhan Vol, so we will see that crazy bastard again. And maybe
literally crazy.
And maybe he'll have a good card.
Something that was thrown out there and I thought would be interesting. So the other consideration is that how they haven't done a block for it. So you have large, small, large. Normally in a large, small, large setting, you have large, you draft it alone. Then you have the small and you draft large, small. And in the spring, you draft just the large again.
Right.
But what if the middle set is a bridge to both? So you'll draft large by itself, then large, small, and then you'll draft small, you know, small, large. But leaving out one of the big sets. It's one of the things that was thrown out there.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's interesting.
Because that middle set could really have an identity, like, that works really well with two large blocks, and you could see cards take on a totally different identity depending on what large
side they're drafting with. Yeah,
so
what other
I thought that was interesting. I don't know if that's it, but
like maybe
if
like
it is,
the middle set has like references to the third set that like mechanics you haven't even seen yet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like,
yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
I think that's a possibility for looking at a different type of draft set, which I think would be kind of cool.
Well, let this be noted that that's what we think it is.
Well, so we talked about Future Sight and how like that was a bad idea. Would they do that? Mention like you were saying, like mention new mechanics in the second set.
Well, you can have a card though. You can have a card that's ambiguous enough that like plays well with the first large set's mechanic, but then when the mechanic of the third large set or the second large set comes out, all of a sudden it plays totally differently.
Well, no, right, but like, I guess like mentioning of other mechanics.
You kind of have like with Ravnica Block, you had things that reference gates. And you didn't really have that many gates until Dragon's Maze, so I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah. Okay, and it may not even be direct references to like specific mechanics, but it could
I'm just
be
saying things that play nice with both.
Play nice with both.
That's what I'm
sure.
Implying.
Sure. No. I was going with
no. A direct call. Yeah. I'm not sure if that would be there though. It would be pretty sweet if it was like, I don't know, like so. Like think of the legends you had in Innistrad where you had Micaeus, right? So like, there's a card that mentions like Micaeus like this way, and then like Micaeus is dead, like, and it's like, oh, by the way, it's still Micaeus, but we gotcha. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, yeah. So this you could reference legends like that, which would be interesting. So, and the implication being here that when we start, it's kind of like Innistrad, right? When we start here, there won't be any dragons, right? Because there's no dragons
on
this plane.
So there used to be dragons, but now there's not.
But then Sarkhanvol's going to, like, dragons reborn.
Sarkhanvol had to go to another plane and get, like, three dragon eggs for some reason. Yeah. And then bring it back. And then, like, walk into a fire. And then something happens.
She's going to come out of the fire naked. It's weird.
I don't want to see a nude Sarkhanvol. I do not.
I can't say I would be a fan of that either. But something that also was kind of given away during the announcement was that there was going to be, I guess not something old coming back
that people have requested
that the people want, and something new that people have wanted but they've never done before. Now they didn't say specifically mechanics, right? So
I don't think he did say mechanics.
Yeah,
he did not
specifically say mechanics.
No, he just said things.
So something
things.
So I who knows what it could
easy
actually
to open
be.
Booster packs
dwarves.
clearly, it's banding, right?
How fat are your fingers if you're like, I can't get the booster manual in?
Sometimes I stick. I don't know what to do.
Put down the booster packs, pick up a dumbbell. I don't know.
No.
But obviously, it's going to be pretty exciting. I mean, I'm sure we already have things that we kind of hope that it's going to be. Someone suggested horsemanship, which I thought was pretty funny because the image there's like people on horses and stuff like that.
I can't see that ever happening.
No, not at all.
That's not realistic.
Did you say Bushido?
I didn't say it, but I mean, that's
a buddy of ours was discussing.
That's a possibility, but it's really boring.
Yeah, it'd be a reworked, it'd be renamed Bushido, sort of how Devotion was kind of like Chroma.
Right.
So it would be something like that probably. And but you know, who knows? I'm excited to see like something that people have requested but they have never done before. So I think that's interesting. So obviously, you know, we really don't know as much as we'd want to right now, and the next set that's coming out is going to be the core set anyway, so we probably won't hear very much of it until, you know, post core set, but that's kind of where we are. But hey, new fall set to look forward to, guys. Now something else that actually isn't our show notes, guys, sorry, but I just remembered while we were talking about it, is there is more core set stuff that has been kind of leaked through Duels of the Planeswalkers, which is typically how a lot of the core set stuff kind of gets out. And it seems like the new returning mechanic for the core set is Convoke.
Convoke, yeah.
Which is really, really interesting. That's a very bold mechanic for them to go with.
I think that's a difficult mechanic to put into a core set.
I think
like,
so,
that's
too.
I think that's the kind of mechanic where it's like, all right, this guy flies. That makes flavorful sense. It flies. And these ones, when you tap all these ones of the same color, you can search your library for a thing that has that same color and put that into play.
well, we don't know if I forget what that card's called, but we don't
Court
know
of Calling.
Yeah, we don't know if Court of Calling is actually
I
in the
know.
Set.
Morgan was sort of, you were saying that you were like, oh, maybe this tells us Court of Calling is coming back, because come on, what else could it be with that mechanic? And I'm like, I seem to remember an Exalted mechanic coming back, and that's not getting a
Noble
Hierarch. So, yeah.
And that's true. Noble Hierarch,
nothing is guaranteed.
I mean, that's a throwback to last year. That is the first show we talked about.
Yeah.
When we talked about, oh my God.
So
cute.
Mike pointed that out, and it was very true. And like Horde of Calling, obviously, is a very powerful powerful card, I should say. So I could see them not putting it back in, but it would be interesting. I think that would never change the dynamic of the standard if that was actually a card in that set. So, guys, get you know, brush up on your Convoke. It's in all colors from what I can see. It may not be in blue. Blue might be the only color that hasn't had a Convoke, but I think it's actually in all colors. Like, even so,
interesting.
It is very, very interesting of a mechanic. And there's a whole bunch of, you know, M14 spoilers. I think each color gets a Lord effect now.
Oh yeah, with like a, they're all 4-mana 2/2s.
Yeah,
with, you know, all other creatures of this color get +1/+1, and they all have an activated ability.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, so definitely, you know, feel free to check it out online. Everything that is known about it right now should be available. And there's a fair amount. There's 39 cards that are actually revealed at this point in time. Yeah. So
they've also spoiled a couple of the spirits, I guess.
Oh, souls.
The souls of various planes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the Soul of Ravnica, Soul of Zendikar that I think we know of at this point in time. And they all have interesting graveyard effects. So you can pay when they're actually on the battlefield, you can pay a cost and you actually have the effect. And then when they are in the graveyard, you could pay the same cost and exile them from your graveyard and have that effect one time. So they kind of have an added bonus even when they are gone. And they all look like 6/6s for 6 with evergreen abilities. So like flying or reach or something like that.
So like fixed titans?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. Less exciting titans, most certainly.
So fixed.
Yeah, sure.
Not broken.
They aren't broken. But like Soul of Ravnica is the blue one. It's a 6/6 flyer for 6, blue and 4. And you draw a card, you pay blue 3 and you draw a card for each color among permanents you control. So that's kind of a callback to Devotion in a way. So it's kind of nice to see. Wait,
say that again. Does you should draw a card for each color among permanents you control?
Yeah. So for each color. Oh, okay.
That's like the Shadowmoor ability.
It's not Devotion, it's how many colors.
It'd be Buddhist, Christian, Jewish, and Muslim.
Right, never mind. Yeah. I rescind my comment.
Devotion to gods, God's religion. It was a really long string reference.
So that does not call back to that at all, and actually is the opposite of what you want.
100%.
Okay, well then, there we go. Well then, that kind of asks the question: like, are we going to have a multicolor block after this? Is that what the cons is going to be? Like, so close to Ravnica?
Highly doubt that.
That's so weird. Then this card just seems very out of place.
I think at this point we have to like chalk this up to we just don't know enough, because we can also say these have graveyard effects. So is it another graveyard block? But they just have with Innistrad 2 block. How about we just wait?
Yeah, but yeah, definitely. take a look at it, check it out, and you know, see what you see about it. And these cards, most of them are going to be cards that are actually going to be appearing in Duels of the Planeswalkers. So, fun stuff. All right, so the last thing we actually want to talk about community-wise is Conspiracy. We actually have a majority of the cards kind of spoiled here, and we're all pretty excited about it. I mean, being that we have Dave here being our Cube enthusiast, and I'm sure that a lot of these cards are pretty exciting to see for Cube at this point in time. But like the main conceit, like the actual Conspiracy cards that you can draft are super interesting, and nothing that will ever be done, has never been done before, and if it hits, will probably be done again in the future. So, and then of course we have some like really high profile reprints that are coming in, things like Swords of Plowshares and Brainstorm. So,
hot foil alert.
Yeah, hot foil alert. So if you want to get your foil, you know, foil.
Do tell.
No, not that. You'd have to be a judge for that. We already talked about it. But if you wanted to get your foil Swords of Plowshares and your foil Brainstorms, you know, this is the set that you're going to want to kind of look for and crack open. Dave, you put this on the show notes, and we obviously all want to talk about it, but was there anything else, anything specifically that you wanted to point out about some of the cards that you saw?
Nothing specific, really.
Okay.
I mean, I'm excited for the set, obviously. It's for anybody who is a Cube owner or Cube designer, I think it's a really exciting set because it adds a lot of new dimensions to the actual draft itself. But even just the set itself looks really sweet. Like, I'm not much of a casual kind of commander player or anything like that. And this kind of is obviously supposed to be a casual set, but I mean, it looks super sweet.
Oh yeah, most certainly. You got things like Exploration being reprinted and getting some new sweet badass art.
That route art though.
Oh, yeah. Seeing Elish Nordigan on a card is pretty interesting. Misdirection getting a reprint, which, is a card that sees some play in Legacy. And just sort of the things that they're doing with it, since it's designed to be drafted in an A-man and then played for, you know, all free-for-all four with four people, excuse me. So things like Will the Council and everything like that is pretty interesting. Mechanic where you actually vote on what happens, which is nice. And Parley is actually really interesting, or Parley, excuse me, where you, it's always you, each player reveals the top card of his or her library, and depending on how many non-land cards are revealed, you get an effect, basically, and then you all draw a card. So, this set's going to be insane to draft, and especially if you can find, like, if you can design cubes around it where you actually play in the format want it to be.
Especially with the cycle of artifacts, the Cogworks and
Oak. Yeah,
anything that changes the draft format, I think, a little bit, is going to be something that's kind of cool.
100%, yeah. I think that is something that is going to be interesting to see. Now, some of them obviously don't work as well as you'd want, since Cube is typically like a one-off format. You don't want to put any Lurking Automatons in there, where you can only draft one and you have a 1-1 for 5.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the set is that it's almost like an unset, but serious.
Right.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Cards just are not going to be playable in any format. Like, Paliano the High City is one that's like, Paliano the High City says, reveal the realest cards you drafted. The player to your right chooses a color, and you choose another color. Then the player to your left chooses a color. Add one mana to your mana pool. You tap it to do this. Of the color of the chosen, of the colors chosen as you drafted cards aimed Paliano the High City.
Right.
Okay, so it's like, hey, quick, name a color. Write it down. I'm going to name a color. All right, you name a color. Write it down. And it's just like, if you open this as a rare, no less, like if you're in Conspiracy, it's like, well, hope you're planning on building a cube or drafting this again somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
You cannot play this indie format ever again. So when you say unset, I think a card like that really does sort of like fit that theme.
Yeah, hammer that home.
Yeah.
Oh, most certainly.
One card that I think actually may see constructed play in Legacy is Council's Judgment. That's the white one sorcery. That's like a vindicate.
Yeah. Yeah. Most certainly, because like you vote on it, but ties go your way. Right.
Right. Yeah. So it's basically just a vindicate when you're playing 1/1.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you can hit things with Shroud or Hexproof or even True Name Nemesis with it.
Yeah. That's a good place to print something that.
Definitely interesting. Yeah.
That you know, when you need to print an answer to a card, you print it in a specialty set. Why not print something in a specialty set? That'll answer that card.
I also like Deathroot Ritual myself. I don't know if it's going to see constructive play. This is it's a morbid card. It's an enchantment.
Oh, yeah. Is it the black-green one?
At the beginning of each end step, if a creature died this turn, you may draw a card. Like, literally, that's the morbid card that if had they printed it in Innistrad, people actually would have played it. Like, oh man, look at this card. Instead, we get Dark Prophecy.
Oh, bum, bum, bum,
sad.
Wow. But actually, I think that art on that card is kind of insane, though.
It's also, yeah, no, that's really good.
It is really, it's nice to see Morbid kind of on a card again, because I just like Innistrad so much. I'm like, aw, fills me with good memories.
Morbid just makes sense. I think they try to do so many, they've been trying to do Death Trigger so often now that Morbid just makes sense.
Yeah, especially when they're trying to set the city in like such of a place of scheming.
Right.
It would make sense
The home of Dak Faden.
It would make sense that there are people dying all the time and things like that. So
it makes sense. I mean, it just makes logical sense. It would just be killing people,
right? Exactly. Clearly, betrayal all around. Yes, a reflecting pool is getting reprinted. That's kind of gotten expensive over time, even though it's not really seen play a whole lot of places. But
did you happen to see that? And I'm gonna the Fibble Thip.
He's on
Provoke.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I just love the fact this. So like, if you follow the story of this character, like first he was totally lost, but now he's like, you made me mad. Like he's like a tiny green Hulk.
And then we also see Mortify get reprinted here because we couldn't have it in Theros. Because
we don't deserve it.
It would just be messed up. Just be messed up.
Destroy enchantment or creature.
Oh, so yes, correct. Everything. That's what, yeah. Yeah, basically.
Everything.
Everything, currently. Yeah.
Sometimes both.
Courtship Cruises, what the hell?
And I just really, I really hope that, are you going to add the one that lets you draft a new pack? Is that rare? I hope it's not rare. It's probably rare.
It's rare. The one where you add a pack to the draft?
That's so sad.
It's rare.
That makes me so sad. Dave's Cube is common in common cubes.
Right. For those who don't know. Yeah.
To be fair, like I that card is exciting, but like there's a lot of cubes that actually play Booster Tutor.
Yeah, sure.
I don't play Booster Tutor, not because I don't think it's good, but because it's just annoying. Every time you cast it, you have to like put another pack together. So it's kind of one of those things.
Yeah, this one you don't have to do that. But
right,
it's interesting. It'll be fun. It'll be fun when people draft this at like a card shop and then have to go buy a pack and draft it. It'll be fun.
Well, you can use any pack, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Homelands, right?
People were already doing pack combos
Pokemon pack.
Pokemon pack.
Get it in there. Could you get unlimited amounts of basic energy to put into your deck? Or is that in the rules?
I will take one fat pack, please.
Oh, man.
People were already doing, like, busted drafts where, like, the pack you add is a Journey to the Next pack where you open all the gods and then you draft the guy that lets you make all your lands tap for any color. So, like, you just play all of the gods when you open one god pack.
Yeah, that's actually a conspiracy. It's world name. Yeah, so you can draft it. You have to play every card you drafted, but all of your lands
are... But if you drafted 15 gods...
Right, so then you put the journey pack in there and get really lucky, and then... Whoa!
So...
How'd that go again?
Oh, sorry.
So is Jordan puking again?
I don't think they actually talked about the conspiracies. They are actual cards that are revealed either at the beginning of the game or are revealed as you play cards, depending on what the conspiracy reads. And it allows you to do crazy things, like give all your give named creatures that you named with that conspiracy haste. Or always go first.
I feel like these work. They feel a lot like planes from Plane Chase, but instead of having a plane affect everybody, each one gets their own conspiracy.
Yeah,
which is kind of cool. You can set it up. Like, unfortunately, the one where you play all your cards, people are going to know when you sit down. Like, I know what conspiracy you have.
I know exactly.
You're playing 90 cards.
your deck is twice the size of mine. I know what you're doing.
But a couple, like the one. I got to make sure I get the name right on this, because the one that lets you draw two hands.
Oh yeah, a backup plan. I think it's something like that
on there.
Draw an additional hand of 7 cards as the game begins. Before taking mulligans, shuffle all but one of your hands into your library.
This is a limited format. You have a 40-card deck. Please see 14 cards out of your deck. And then it's like, gah!
Not to mention if you happen to get 2 of these, you just draw like 3 separate hands at the beginning.
That's insane.
That seems fine.
Take your pick.
Yeah, please. So we're obviously pretty excited about it. We don't have like everything in the set yet for some reason. I don't know
when's the release.
I'm sure we'll have it by next Monday because it comes out on the 6th.
Yeah,
next week then. So
Saving that money. Though.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll arrange to get a box spot and get people together to draft it over the weekend or something like that. That'd be pretty sweet.
And normally, Mark Rosewater, he says something like how excited he is about the set because like Magic is 20 years old and we're doing something new and he says that a lot. Like I feel like they like shake their own hands a lot.
That's his thing. I mean,
but honestly, this is the one time when he said that where I'm actually like, you know what? I actually am impressed because you took a very difficult part of the game to manage and I've added something new to it. And even if like people are after they play it, like even if you draft conspiracy, like, okay, I don't know if I want to do that again. Who cares? You know, it's exciting. I like it. I'm glad to see it.
So let's go ahead and we'll move into the competitive portion of the cast. So we had a couple events that happened over the weekend. We had Star City Games New Jersey. We had Space Jam Atlanta. And then we had the Comic Town PTQ. So let's first, and we'll take a look at New Jersey and see what kind of happened. They were standard. It was actually taken down by Black White Midrange, which is something we haven't seen in a while. It's kind of been in the top 16 of a few events here and there. But it was piloted by Charlie Reinhardt. And I actually haven't taken a look at his list here real quick. Let me pull it up.
It's fairly standard.
You see
Vanishing Light is really...
The new deal.
That's what's coming in and making the
new hotness. And Deicide in the sideboard.
And Deicide, yeah.
And that's about it. He is playing one of Temple of Enlightenment just for the Death's Cry.
Yeah, Death's Cry.
Death's Cry. But yeah, I don't see anything else that is too notable about it. Just is sort of the mid range list that you all know and love before Journey to the Knicks, only with some new sprinkles.
Sprinkles.
But it was honestly heartbreaking because Chris Van Meter was his opponent in the finals and lost, unfortunately.
He won game one, too.
He won game one. Like, you thought it was going to happen. He's like, he gets to shave. The man gets to shave. He actually, he won West Virginia States.
That does not count.
It was decided that he could trim. He could trim, I think. It was fine. But it did not. He could not shave. And for him to get so close, you're just on the brink, Chris Van Meter.
The saddest thing is, too, he dominated that tournament. It was a 10-round tournament. He went 8-0, double draw into top 8, and then didn't lose a game until the finals.
Right.
And then
to be fair, that finals matchup, you know, just looking at two decks, it seems like a miserable matchup.
It's pretty rough. Yeah.
CVM played Gen Monsters, so
yeah. I did watch that final match, and he did have a couple turns where he could have ripped something at the end for the win, but he just drew a bunch of lands, right, which was unfortunate.
Yeah, but you know, best of luck to CVM. I really hope that you are able to shave at some point in time. I bet you didn't think it'd be so hard when you made this bet, but here we are. Now, to round out the top eight, we had Esper Control twice, both in third and fourth place. Fourth place being Gerard Fabiano. Thank you for doing well here, Gerard, and not in the Pro Tour.
Right.
I don't appreciate that. I drafted you. And then we also have Mono Black Devotion, Red Green Monsters, Blue White Red Control, and Red White Burn in eighth place. So kind of a
wide format, really.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing we see doubling up is Esper Control, which doesn't surprise anyone. It's still a solid deck.
But if you're following the cycle, right, you had, a couple weeks ago, you had Black, and then now you had Burn, and now you have Control. Everyone's popping their heads up.
Yeah, and it, as expected, we kind of see mid-range show up again. It's going to start becoming more of a dominant force, so probably Control will start taking over a little bit more, and then we'll kind of see what happens, but nothing shifting too wildly. Now, the wild list that we have is a Naya mid-range list in 10th place, piloted by Adam Van Fleet. And he has things like Keening Apparition, two of them as a main deck card, and then Voyaging Satyr as a four of in his list over, obviously, probably something like Elvish Mystic. I was looking at this, it looked a little weird, and I was like, why wouldn't you want this over that? And it's probably just simply for mana fixing. Like, you have a lot of double costs. Yeah. But yeah, this is kind of an interesting list. We have things like Magma Jet and Magma Spray in the sideboard, so lots of magma shooting out of places.
I don't ever want to picture that again.
No.
Magma! Are there pulls for that? Or is that... You just stuck with that?
I mean, they printed them both in the block. I think they wanted to show that Purphoros was just very, explosive.
Magma.
Liquid art magma.
I think this list is interesting only because, most of the Naya lists you've seen that are control lists have some of them are, assembles... bigger right. card, and this one's just all in on Planeswalkers.
Yeah, this is a Planeswalker list. Very much so a mid-range list that is very powered by Planeswalkers, things like Elspeth, and four of Xenagos the Reveler, which, was a player in PT in the Pro Tour, so.
I feel like this deck, especially against the mono-black variants, where, if you have cards like, Paula Kronos and Stormbreath Dragon, where if you can start baiting out their Heroes Downfalls with bigger creatures, then your Planeswalkers are going to go the distance against
them. Yeah, they're going to take over.
Black does not have, without a Heroes Downfall, like a Xenagos or an Elspeth just takes over that matchup.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. So, yeah, definitely exciting. Yeah. I hope that more mid-range lists do show up. I hope that at some point in time they can support things like Chain of the Rocks and things like that. So, but yeah, definitely, a good showing. It sounded like it was a really fun open, and sorry I didn't get to watch it. We were too busy actually at the Columbus PTQ. So before we get into that, actually, though, we want to talk about the bigger tournament that was sealed, which is GP Atlanta.
Space Jam.
Oh, fuck me.
What is a GP?
I don't understand.
Sorry, SJ.
Space Jam was on.
Oh, SJ. Oh.
Space Jam was on today.
Oh.
I was like, happy Memorial Day, everybody.
Michael Jordan is going to save the world. Anyway, Space Jam Atlanta. Now, normally don't talk about limited format. This was a stacked top eight, so we had to talk about it. There are some awesome names in here. So we have things like John Stern, Sean McLaren, Alex Malion, William Jensen, Tomoharu Saito.
Did we say Majlaton before?
Majlaton, sorry, excuse me. Alex Majlaton, Vidyadanto Wijaya, and then Chris Fennell is the last known. And then we also have Charlie Murdoch, who is probably
he was
the
token random guy.
Yeah, the token rando up in this bitch.
I think his profile said he was a blind lawyer. Oh, wait, wrong Murdoch.
That's the wrong Murdoch. Hey, we appreciate it, though.
It's not even a good joke.
What am I referencing?
Exactly.
That's what I thought.
That he's actually referencing Daredevil, just so you know.
Daredevil was...
For the people at home,
Daredevil. Not Murdoch.
I was Googling it.
But not only that, I mean, if you look at just the top 32, this is
insane. It goes further down, yeah. It's definitely interesting to see. Now, this is kind of an anomaly because obviously the Pro Tour was here just a week ago, so all the internationals were still there. They just like, we'll just
all
stay
the immigrants
here.
Were still here. Hopefully they'll leave now, right, Morgan?
That's not what I meant. Anyway, anyone who traveled internationally to attend Pro Tour Atlanta was still here. Pro Tour Journey in the next. Anyway, but yeah, so, I mean, we kind of just want. Did anyone else have anything to note? I didn't actually get to watch any of the GP coverage.
Well, and this will lead us into what we're going to talk about for the yeah. PTQ as well. But one thing I did notice is that this format's very difficult, specifically to draft. Like, I've enjoyed drafting it. It's been fun. But something I have noticed, and I saw this in Therosborn as well, but Kibler was posting pictures of decks that he was like, this is what I drafted. Guess what I went with it? It was like 0-3, and the deck was solid. Like, had a good curve, everything. And I think there's a lot of decks that, you know, the decks themselves look powerful, but are just traps compared to the way that the rest of the format shapes up. Or, you still have some of these decks that are just like, have such strong draws out of the gate, where you're just like, well, I have powerful cards, but they don't catch me up. And that's something I had an issue with, on Saturday. So I thought it was interesting. There's a lot of pros who they thought they knew the format well, thought they attacked the format well, and still ended up just burning on day two when we got to the draft format.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. First of all, I'd like to say the winner was John Stern. I just want to say that he did totally have a Chromanticore in his sideboard in the final draft. Fuck yeah. All right, you go ahead, Dave.
Another interesting thing about this tournament was that we see Huey Jensen top-inning yet another GP. So yeah. That's seven now in the last year.
He's been doing well for himself.
And of course, now with the new structure that they have for GPs is they only take your top five finishes.
Right.
So he literally... If he lost in the first round of top eight, he would not gain anything from this. He would needed to actually top four at least, which he did before losing to John Stern there in the semifinals. But I mean, that's just unreal.
The seven top 100%. Year. Just ridiculous, 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 ridiculous. So, but yeah, congrats to anyone and everyone that top eight of the top 16 to that event. It would definitely seem like a very stacked top eight. So if you did well, good on you. I think that we're good to go in.
If you're Charlie Murdoch there in the top eight, you're probably like,
yeah, I don't want to be in that draft pod.
Well, and he top four, dude. He beat Chris Fennell too. So yeah. at that point, you're just like
I should be.
You're like the dog among cats, and it's like just a cat, a cat.
Round two, they still don't know I'm here. I do believe I've assimilated to pro status.
I wonder how many people. Actually got Pro Tour invites from this because they don't pass down, right? That's just like
so one
yeah probably one or two.
Murdoch would be the one because we top four because the size of this is only 13
just under players. Yeah just under 13
so it's literally going to be like Charlie Murdoch is probably going to be the only guy.
Yeah,
that's, could you imagine them like call up the answer top eight in first place, John Stern, yeah. William Jensen, yeah. Tomer Saito, yeah. Charlie Murdoch. Who the hell's that guy?
His two friends in the back going, hey, can you go? We have to be home at work tomorrow, so let's go. I hope you lose first round.
Hey, Charlie, can you ask Saito for gas money?
Yeah. Get their autograph while you're up there. All
right. So
that's actually not nice. You did a really good job, Charlie Murdoch. If you randomly heard this, we are not making fun of you.
Seriously, we're impressed, really.
No, honestly. And then the top five takeaway cards from this format, from this tournament were Golden Hind, Rise of Eagles.
Told you.
Eidolon of Countless Battles.
Rise, Hubris, Eagle, rise.
And King Makar, the Gold Cursed, which I can attest to is a good card.
Is it?
It's not bad.
It's not bad. When you draft all black, it's really good, actually. So, definitely cards to take a look at. And even Rise of Eagles, honestly, is something I would have to take a second look at.
If I would have had it in my sealed pool, I would have played it without even, I would have done, backflips.
Oh, yeah.
The four colorless, two blue, make two juice. Yeah. I told you.
Well, it's sealed. I think it's good. I think
in draft it's good now, too.
Maybe I'm just wrong about that. I just don't like that card.
That's fair.
So let's go ahead.
You're the guy who also would have opened, Tower's Invocation in course of draft and be like, well, that's crap.
No.
Two.
Rude.
Boom.
Rude. I would not have thought that.
This green creature's a 4/4/4, so I'd rather have that one.
I mean, this Thrag doesn't even that good a 5-mana, 5/3. It's not even on curve.
Hate you all. Anyway, so let's talk about PTQ Comic Town. It was a sealed format as well. So, you know, it's fairly interesting, I guess.
And Dave's mocking it. Wow, just because you can't win one means you don't care?
No, I can't attend one.
Okay. And it was Mike and I who actually attended and entered into the main event.
And not many others.
No, that was actually the shocking thing.
Pretty upsetting. We only had 139?
It's 130-something.
Yes. Seven rounds?
It was eight rounds.
Small eight, okay.
But it was, Ryan, who owns Comic Town, it was a 5K. Like,
yeah, it was a huge payout. It paid out the top 32.
They honored the payout. Give him credit. They honored the payout. But they seeded for almost 400.
Oh, wow.
Did not get there.
Yeah.
Huh.
So,
I don't know if that says something about this format, but if you go over the PTQ numbers,
I think that's definitely something that we can talk about.
They said the last West Virginia PTQ was under 40.
Yeah, which is intense.
Why aren't we driving to those?
I think it'd be a lot different if it was something like standard.
Oh, of course it would. I'm saying it's definitely an indication, but like, I still remember, like, the Innistrad sealed from a while back was almost 400 people in Columbus.
Sealed to me almost makes more sense. There'd be a higher population just because, like, you don't have to have a deck, right?
Yeah.
You could just take Buddy Schmo, who's kind of relatively new, and
took some guesses. The increased prize payout did raise the price of the event to 40,
okay,
which is $10 more than the average person is used to paying for a sealed PTQ.
Because you're paying more than the packs you actually...
Correct.
Right.
And 40, I mean, 40 bucks is nothing to scoff at. I mean, it is a large amount of money.
That's true. It's sizable.
That's an SCG open. Right. Yeah, right.
That's true.
Granted, he paid like an open. You know what I mean? He did.
Yeah. Right. But top 32 would mean 50, right?
Right, yes.
Yeah, so...
So, but it's just, I don't know. I think this format, I think people are going to be happy when it switches, you know, 2 weeks to Modern.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. Mm-hmm. So, I'll go ahead and I'll talk about my past pool first. So... I unfortunately did not get to keep the Elspeth pool that I was passed in passing because they make you pass it so many times.
Passed 7 or 8 times.
I just wanted him to stop when I had it in my hand. I'm like, I have Elspeth. I just want this so bad, but then I had to pass it. And then I got, I would say that my pool is fairly mediocre, starring such glorious rares as Bearer of Heavens, and other rares of his ilk. And my white was good because I had a Heliod and like solid white creatures, but I couldn't figure out like what my splash color was necessarily going to be. I went black and I probably should have gone blue just based on like what colors I had, but I was not very thrilled about this pool, and I went 0-2 and it just was not very good, and I was not pleased with what I opened and or anything of that nature. So, there's the distinct possibility that I could have built my deck just incorrectly, because Mike did look at my cards that I had, and blue potentially would have been just better, and even some black cards that I had in there, since my pool was mediocre, I should have just been playing with. But, I just don't think it was anything marvelous or anything that could have, like, necessarily won me games. That was kind of my sealed experience. I did play at the game day / TCG player and top 4'd that bitch, so I'm cool with that.
Did you get a playmat?
I did.
You got a champion playmat?
No, I mean, we got a TCG player playmat. Yeah,
no championship playmat.
Oh, congratulations to John Meidinger, who did win that tournament. Yeah, and is a member of Team Comic Town and connoisseur of fine hats.
Also true.
So, Mike, you go ahead and then talk about your whole sealed pool experience.
My pool was pretty I do have to share a funny story with you. The guy I sat across from during registration, it was his first PTQ.
Oh,
so he had not registered before. And he was doing a good job with it, but we were getting down in time for the registration, and the head judge, which is Stephen Briggs, was like saying, like, hey, you know, we're at this.
Booster.
And he's like, God, I was, by the end of the day, he wouldn't stop doing that. I got real tired of it. I'm like, we're playing real magic here. Please stop talking. Like, I'm actually trying to, like, pay attention to a board state, and you keep saying booster 50 damn times. Anyways, though. So this poor guy is, like, running out of time, and he's holding a gold token in his hand. And is scouring the artifacts on all... Because it's a three sheet, because it has all three sets on it.
Right.
And he's like, oh. And I'm just, like, looking at him for a second, I'm like, you know that's a token, right? And he goes, what? And he flips it over, and he goes, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Oh, that's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
But I was just like, he doesn't realize that's a token. Oh.
Oh.
Part of you almost wanted to sit there and watch it for another second.
I mean, I watched it for longer than I probably did. But, so I got past a pool that was a little frustrating. It didn't have any, like, sweet, like, bomby rares. I had two temples. I had a Temple of Malice and a Temple of Epiphany. I had, like, a Titan of Eternal Fire. Like, my red was weird because I had some aggressive stuff, and then I had, like, the Titan, and I had, like, a Bolt of Keranos and a Riddle of Lightning. So, like, I had some stuff that would lead you to be a little slower, like, you know, double red, higher in the chain, and then, like, a couple of Minotaurs that were a lot faster, and nothing to bridge. No Kragma Warcallers or anything, or not Warcaller, Kragma Butchers or anything to really steady it. So I had nothing to go with it. My white was average. I had a lot of white cards, but nothing good. I ended up going blue-black based off of the suite of spells I had in blue. I had, like, a Nimbus Naiad, but I also had Double Retraction Helix and Hubris. I had a Bile Blight and a Feast of Dreams. But I had no real finishers and no rares. Like, my finishers were, like, either, like, 3-2 Flyers or the Lampia that makes your Constellation makes your opponent discard a card. And I was using, like, that and Brain Maggot to keep my opponents off of their better cards. Like, I was playing a Counterman because I didn't have an answer to Bombs. And I played both Scrylands, so I mean, like that's how my deck was.
That was the weird two rares in your list.
And my matches were all very grindy. Like I from one perspective, I feel like I got all my wins based on play skill. Like yeah, like I really had to grind matches out. I mean, I had a match against a red black deck that had a Timuret the Murder King, where we played it to the Sport State where I was what?
Nothing. Murder King.
Yeah, Murder Get him. King. The King. The Murder.
Yeah, he's murdering that day.
But we literally came down to where I was at 2 life, he was at 1, and I got 2 creatures in play, and he had no, like, he had 1 card in hand after a Lampia, and he had Tiramat back in play, and it was like, if he draws a creature, like, I'm just dead. If he doesn't draw a creature, he's just dead. So, and a judge has been watching our match for the last 8 minutes because this has gotten so intense, and I'm just like, go. And he's like slow rolling off the top of his library and hits the swamp. Just like, ah!
Those are the best games, man.
It was fun, but it was just like, my wins weren't convincing, but my deck was good enough, but it just, if they landed something crazy, like, or if they had like a really good like trick in combat that I couldn't play around, I just had nothing in the deck to come back. One of the guys who top 8ed, one of the local guys who played in a recent Pro Tour, like I was his only loss because my Lampia made him discard his Godsend. So he couldn't equip it to his Nemesis Immortals or his Fabled Hero or like Jeez. Oh yeah or his Courser of Kruphix. You know what I mean? Like, so my deck,
no big deal.
So you know he had a sweet deck and I was able to beat it. It just, I had to draw in the right sequence. I had a game against the guy who took 9th, who like I had to win in such ways as my opponent has a Deserter Quarters, right, and I have a Wavecrest Triton that's bestowed with a Erebos' Emissary, and he goes to tap it mid combat. Or like, I'm like, combat. He's like, yeah, tap your guy. I'm like, in response, Retraction Helix my Wavecrest Triton so I can bounce the Triton to my hand so that I can attack with my Emissary. And he was like, you can't do that. I'm like, he has Summoning Sickness. I'm like, wow, it's been on the battlefield for 3 turns. And he's like, oh, that makes sense. And I'm like, yeah, like, and I knew that. So I, like, when I say, like, and the guy I was playing against is a really good player, but it's one of those things that doesn't come up very often. So, like, I was able to win that game, still lost that match, but win a game where it's like, I have to know something very specific my opponent does not. That was also the same match where I countermanded my opponent's Deserter's Quarters because that card did some ridiculous work for him. Countermanded it. He milled 4 creatures, and I was like, sweet, straight gas. Then tapped his two green sources to play the Nemesis Immortals he had in hand because I put 4 creatures in his yard. I was just like, oops. I was like, so at first I'm like, yeah, counter this. Oh, man, mill guys. Yes. What the? It was just bad. So, but it was a grindy deck. I managed to get there in the end, at least to cash,
yeah,
which felt nice because I played a lot of Magic. But it was some of the most stressful Magic I played. Like, a lot of board sets, states I really had to think about. But I will say this, Sigil Starfish, man, I love that card. I love that card so much.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch you play with it. Like, when you would use it, like you would cast it, pass the turn, go into your upkeep, and then you would use it then. Well, most people would be like, oh, I want to do this end of turn, but you're like, I need the immediate effect right now, especially with your list.
Again, I know how bad my cards are. I need to draw them and not lands.
So. But it was great to see that. And but yeah, I mean, the PTQ was run you know, fairly well. It was weird to walk out of a PTQ and it's still like daylight out and like see the sun. You're like, this isn't right. It should be nighttime. All the events like kind of closed at the same time too. So like, I was done with my
event. No, they that well. I'm pretty upset, honestly, because Ryan's done such a god job. Get it? Because it's the Theros. But he's done such a good job running these events in this region and really building them up. So it's kind of frustrating to see. You know, granted, it's Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
There's graduation parties happening. Like, this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely a significantly lower turnout than we had recently. And I don't know. I hope that the next time around, yes, I'm guilt tripping all you people randomly listening to this. Go give him your money.
Yeah, please. He does a really good job.
Are we going to give a shout-out to Rocky?
Yeah. Rocky Creighton was the winner, and he used to live in the Columbus area.
Yeah, he used to be in the area. I think he's coming back, actually, which is terrifying all of us.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He's another end boss.
I think he said school is going to be bringing him back. So
fair enough.
I believe this is his first qualification, so it is. So congrats, Rocky.
And it was the top eight, those who drafted, it was a pretty good draft. I mean, you had, I think, at least two or three people who I know have been queued before sitting in that draft. So yeah. That's pretty awesome. I'm happy to, for him. And then, Dave was like offering to bet him earlier, which was nice. So
something like that. Yeah.
I think he tried to type need, but he typed bet, and we all knew that's what he meant.
Yeah. Deep down inside,
wasn't a typo.
It was a Freudian autocorrect.
That's the best.
Let's go ahead and we'll kind of give our shout outs here. We of course want to thank Empire Cards and Games. They are our lovely sponsor, and you can check them out at their website, which is empirecards.com. Find them on Facebook too. That's where they post all their events, and you definitely will want to go to any event that's ran there. It's always great. We also want to thank Comic Town because they are definitely a supporter of the show, and they should definitely be shout out to. Definitely check them out at comictown.net, I think is their website. And they also have a huge Facebook presence, so seek them out on there. While you're on your computer and looking at Empire Cards and Comic Town, you should probably look at our website. It's pretty easy to find, just at yourendstep.com. Not very difficult.
.com.
We are
with some fresh updates.
We have some profiles from us up, so you get to know a little bit more about our dumbasses. And if you want, no big deal.
If you don't, we're not your boss.
Yeah, it's true.
So we're not the police.
We're not the police. So definitely check that out. And that's also the easiest and quickest way to get access to the episodes. And they usually get uploaded around, Wednesday or Thursday. And they usually show up around Sunday on MTGcast. So, of course, we also want to thank our listeners. And thanks you for coming back every week to find our podcast and listen to it. And we'll catch you next week. Bye.